He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Yeah, and by the way, like, you know, Vando, if he comes back, we got a kind of weird quote from JJ in this one where they were like, we're not sure when we're going to get him back now.
Yeah.
All right. No setbacks. We just have no idea when this guy is going to come back. Yeah. That was a little weird. Obviously, we're still waiting for more clarity on the Coloco situation. ESPN reported over the weekend that, according to their sources, the Lakers anticipate that he would be cleared very soon. We are now going on three days removed from that. For what it's worth, I reported that that wasn't the sense that I was quite getting. So we'll see what that turns out. But, you know, if they get either one of those guys back, that makes them a more physical team. We'll see what things look like when Wood gets back too, and that makes them bigger in aggregate as well. And then look, like, you know, the goal to the beginning of the season is really quite clear. Go out and win as much as you possibly can and convince Rob Pelinka to do his job. Like, that's really it, is convince Rob to, like, push a couple more chips into the middle of the table to give them a little bit better chance than they have right now. Because, I you know, this exciting win notwithstanding, there are some issues with this team. The margins are very, very thin. I didn't love what we saw from D'Angelo Russell for three quarters of this game. Great fourth quarter, I thought. Like, I don't think the Lakers win this game without that fourth quarter when he stopped jacking threes and started kind of getting into the paint and started dishing stuff out, had that great lob to Jackson Hayes, you know, which was a great moment too. Jackson Hayes also, right? Like, can't be your backup, I don't think, and feel particularly great about this team. So I thought it was a great win for this Lakers team. And the point is to stay close enough so that, you know, the line that Rob likes to use is, well, we couldn't find anything that we felt put us over the top. And the further that you are from the top, the easier it is for him to continue to make that excuse.
Right. I think we just have to, you talked about Jackson Hayes. I think that's the correct archetype. That's just not the right person probably, but I love, like, I can't ask for more from him. He wasn't able to really stop the Conley Gobert pick and roll, like when our bench unit was in, but I can't really expect that. I thought he did a nice job on switches. Anthony, we have to talk about Dalton Connect though. Like, that was, I thought that was extremely enjoyable to watch. A rookie that came in, Candace Parker,
all right,
on the project.
Can I ask you? All right. So I wanted to ask you about this specifically.
Okay.
I let Callie out onto Callie's my dog. I let Callie out onto the back patio for a second and then heard all of the shuffling because she was going after something behind my barbecue grill. So we had to move my grill and it wound up being a possum. I had to grab this possum by the tail, like walk it down the stairs and let it out behind my fence so that Callie wouldn't kill it. And in the time that it took me to do all of that, I came back and it was a 13-point lead.
Yeah.
I think this was in like the second quarter.
It was.
If I'm not mistaken.
To start.
What happened? like, because I came back, like when I left to go save this possum's life, it was like a close game. It was kind of back and forth. The Lakers had taken the lead. The Wolves were like, they were taking a lead at some point.
Yeah.
And then I got back and it was like, what? Like, I actually like squinted my eyes to make sure I was seeing the score right. What happened? Was it Dalton like by himself? What happened?
It's definitely not a coincidence that it started when Dalton came in. If you remember, Minnesota, I believe, was up one after the first quarter, and our defense was actually very solid, but we could not score. And what we did was, when we put Dalton in, I mean, I thought Candace Parker had a great quote. She said, "It must be amazing to play for a coach that plays like you, you know, like." And so, like,
yeah.
And JJ was just, I didn't expect Dalton to get this many plays like called for him right away, but every action was involving him. And he has an attribute that I really like, you know, in players. He's not just a good screener. Like, he makes sure to get contact on screens. And that's so important. A lot of players set, like, it's not an actual ghost screen, but like they'll just set the pick to set it with no vigor. Like they would, but like Dalton goes and actually sets the pick. And he got a lot of open looks. So I believe the first play out of that was like out of their horn set. And LeBron and Dalton, a lot of screening for each other. And Dalton got a three out of it, got a really nice pass Jackson Hayes off of it. He looks like what an older rookie should look like, right? Like, he's ready to play right away. Very clear that they have design actions for him. And I thought it just opened up a lot of stuff. Like, you just needed one guy that the defense had to account for. This was when Minnesota, Anthony, went super big. They had Naz Reid and Gobert out there at the same time. And the Lakers countered with LeBron, AD, and Jackson Hayes. And it's just this ginormous battle between the two. I don't believe those three even played a single preseason minute together, which I think is interesting. But the Lakers just went huge. And then they had Dalton connect next to him, and Dalton was getting open shots. He wasn't the reason for the 13-point lead, but I thought he like really relaxed our offense, where we have like an entry point offensively. Like, our entry point is a Dalton screen, and we work around that. And now he was – like, that was really fun to watch. Was kind of didn't have as much an impact in the second half. But another player, Anthony, that I did not notice defensively, which I think is a good thing. Like, I didn't notice Dalton defensively. The Wolves didn't really go at him. He had a few deflections in transition, some bad passes in transition. But no, I thought that was just that was fun to watch Dalton look every bit as advertised as the shooter we were kind of hoping for. In our offense.
So I am seeing a lot of people calling for more Dalton minutes. So he played tonight. He played 16 minutes.
That's
Max only played 11. He had 5 fouls. Max has like the worst whistle that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So like, Rudy Gobert is moving while he's setting screens, and then he throws up his arms and for some reason gets fouls.
I think three of them were like on blocking fouls on Anthony Edwards. Like, they were a little bit tough, touchy calls. I'm not saying they weren't fouls, but it was just, yeah, it feels like the
well, given the way that the rest of the game was being played, it was a physical game out there. Yeah. Like, I felt like Max was getting some kind of ticky-tack calls.
Just during that stretch, it was ticky-tack and Max got in trouble.
Christian Navarro makes an interesting point here that I had no idea about. Connect looked more ready than Christie. I blame Jenna Ortega. Do you know who Jenna Ortega is? She's Wednesday. Well, nope, you won't know who the Adams family is either.
Adams family, the Halloween something? Like, they're in like,
yeah,
the Halloween,
yeah. Apparently, like, I Googled Jenna Ortega, Max Christie, and they're a thing. That's news to me. Well done, Max.
Is she a singer?
Go, bud.
Or,
huh?
Or like, is she a singer or like
no, she's an actress. She plays Wednesday in Netflix made a movie about the Adams family, and and she was like this breakout star over the last year or so. Well done, Max. Good job, Max. If that's why he looked a little sluggish at sometimes, you know, I can't say I blame the guy. But no, like I thought the foul issues kind of took him out of a rhythm. 11 minutes is kind of low for Christie. I think that will go up over the course of the year. Bronny got 3 minutes, obviously, in his run. We'll talk about him in a little bit. I think those minutes will go to Max or to Dalton, so their minutes will go up. Gabe played 17. I think that should probably come down a little bit, seeing as Austin and D'Lo are both point guards, and the Lakers need two guards out there more. So I would like to see Vincent's minutes go down a little bit. Christie and Dalton's go up a little bit. I would like to see Gabe be slotted as the fifth guard there, kind of not break glass in case of emergency. I think that puts him too far down the rotation, but a little bit less time than he spent out there. D'Lo and Russell, they played 34 and 36 minutes tonight. Kind of wonder if they'll play that many minutes moving forward, given how many options Redick has. So, I look, you know, Candace mentioned it. You mentioned it. They've you know, the Lakers have made it very clear that they think very, very highly of Dalton, and that JJ thinks very, very highly of Dalton. I think we'll probably see a situation here where he starts to get a lot more minutes moving forward. And look, it's like we said at the top, I'm not rooting for one over the other, by the way, when it comes to Max and Dalton. I just want the competition, and I want that to make both of those guys better. And whoever gets the lion's share of those minutes, I want them to earn it and make the Lakers better as a result of it. And if that's how this plays out, then cool.
Yeah. It's interesting because, I have to go back and watch, but the Gabe minutes weren't like very promising for me. I thought he was okay defensively. He closed late in the fourth as well, I believe, for D'Lo. I love what I saw from Connect. Max has to hit some open shots. Like, he just has to. Like, I think he was pressing a little bit. He took a bunch of really tough threes, fading threes, just trying to see one go down. I still thought his defense was solid. Again, we threw him on Anthony Edwards and got some tough fouls, but his rebounding was there. His physicality was there. 11 minutes is very low. But yeah, Anthony, I watched Connect tonight. I'm like, man, that dude needs to play like that. Like, the shooting on this team, again, tonight was a weird one because D'Lo was, I believe, 1 for 8 or whatever it was from three for the
one for
the
seven.
Whole night. 1 for 7. Yeah, Austin didn't
really Reeves was over ball. 5.
So no one was really hitting, and like Dalton came in right away and hit one. And I was like, man, like, it just opens up the floor, especially if we're going to play that big. Cam Reddish didn't play tonight, which I thought was interesting. I really thought he was going to like enter in the rotation somehow. But if we're going to go this like LeBron.
The thing is, Raj, he's not good at basketball.
Okay, sure. But I just for the size and defensive capabilities. But if we're going to go Hayes, LeBron, and AD, like, you got to have someone with gravity out there. And and Dalton, even as a rookie, has like legit he got LeBron a baseline dunk because they ran this back screen action for him and they cheated up, and LeBron got this like baseline slam. It's just like having someone with that. It's like Malik Beasley, but he's 6'8" and he actually hits shots. Like, it's just a godsend for this team. You're right. 16 is probably lower. I think it's going to depend on his shot making and, you know, if he can stand out there defensively. But the instincts are there. He's an athlete. He had a driving finish as well at the rim. Like, that dude's a confident dude. I love what I saw.
You look at the bench plus minuses.
Yeah.
Hayes -1, Gabe -2, Max -5, Bronny -5 in 3 minutes. And then Dalton was a +7, you know, like given, you know, how kind of iffy the bench looked out there. I don't think it's necessarily a coincidence. And, you know, like, yeah, you have the one run to point to. But like you said, when teams see a fire alarm shooter out there, like, fire alarm shooters open things up. And he's one of those guys. And by the way, like, this is game one. It, you know, as he becomes more attuned to NBA speeds and how quickly, you know, the rhythm of shooting there, you know, that's only going to get better. All right, let's see if we have anything else. Oh, yeah, that's right. We have to talk about the history that LeBron and Bronny James made tonight. I thought overall it was fairly well executed, but also really kind of pointed to the amount of work that it took to execute it. The Lakers, when Bronny went in there, were up 14, had all the momentum in the world. And then I thought the offense got kind of stagnant. I thought, like, everybody was kind of bumping into each other. You did get that one highlight play from LeBron, that tomahawk dunk on the baseline. But I thought, and here's where I'll give JJ credit. And I think this is where I think it does go a long way in signifying, like, the partnership between him and LeBron. Clearly LeBron wanted to make the history tonight. The Lakers wanted to make the history tonight, but also JJ was like, hey, yeah, we also have a game to win here, you know?
Right.
And Bronny only played that 1 3-minute stretch. I was sweating through all 3 minutes that he was out there because, you know, like you have Anthony Edwards out there, man. And Minnesota was a really effing good team last year. And you give them any little bit of momentum, as we saw in the fourth quarter, that game became a 4-point game way too damn fast. And I think JJ deserves credit for being like, all right, we're good here. Cool. Now, I want to be absolutely clear here. Cool moment for the James family. Cool moment for NBA history. Insane that LeBron is still good enough to be able to pull this off. All of that stuff is objectively true. But also, for whatever reason, like, I don't want to sound like the cynic out there for being like, yeah, also, we need to win a basketball game here. You have an opportunity to win a basketball game. Can we bring the focus back to winning a basketball game here? I don't know why that is some like controversial stance.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. Again, like you said, awesome. It's funny. Cause imagine being the Timberwolves and be like, are they serious right now? Like they think the lead is big enough right now for them to do this. But no, I thought it was a great moment. Bronny came in and, you know, ran back and forth. I thought he did, like, he had one defensive possession on Anthony Edwards that went, looked like Ant was like, okay, let me show this dude. And he got a nice contest on him. He missed. Mm-hmm. Julius Randle hit a jumper on him. But no, it was a cool moment. I thought LeBron would kind of bask in it a little bit more, but he kind of just went on as if it was, you know, just a normal player checking in. There was no special moment, nothing like that. I thought they had a chance to run some action on the side. And yeah, I don't know how they plan. I mean, obviously they didn't plan a double digit lead, but that's like,
hoping for one.
Like it went absolutely as perfect as you could hope for. Like you get a double digit lead. It's like at 16, which is that like bubbling point of like before it's a blowout, but it's still a competitive game. And you get Bronny in there with, I believe, most of these starters. If I remember, I got to go back and watch. I think he and LeBron came in together, and I think they came in with most of the starters in there. Yeah, the offense was a little clunky. I thought LeBron was trying to, you know, create some momentum, some energy in the building to kind of make it not, because it's very clear every eyeball on there was on Bronny, and you could tell there was a little bit tightening. He got the ball, and the crowd would just erupt, and that must be such a tough moment for him.
Yeah, he had that three. Yeah. That looked good, by the way. Like it looked like it had a real chance of going in. Didn't wind up going in. And like as he's releasing that shot, you saw everybody get behind him. And like I want to be clear, I think far too few people are looking at this through the perspective of like what might be best for Bronny. But I don't like that's a very different point than Lakers fans aren't pulling for Bronny. I think everybody is really pulling for Bronny. When he goes down to the G League, when that season starts and he starts developing as a basketball player, I will be pulling my, like, I will be rooting my ass off for Bronny to succeed. I was really hoping that this went well tonight, because if he went out there and then like, boom, 10-0 run, like, that would have been really awkward, you know?
Yeah.
What I wanted to see happen was for him to knock down, you know, I think he had an opportunity at a tip in. He had an opportunity at a 3-point shot. I would have been, I would have loved if he made both of those. I would have loved to get a, you know, you had the Griffies in town there. You know, famously, they went back to back the time that they shared a baseball field together. It would have been great to get that kind of a moment between LeBron and Bronny, but you know, you can't quite guide sports in that same way. You can't script sports that way.
No.
You know, that like history happened with the Griffies is so spectacular because you can't script that. You didn't get a meet. You get two meatballs thrown at Ken Griffey Sr. and then Ken Griffey Jr. So, cool moment, really happy for all involved, but I'm also happy that it didn't like awkwardly play a role in the Lakers losing, or it didn't get awkward where the Lakers were really clearly trying to get him going or anything like that. I thought it was handled really well by JJ. Get him out there, get him out of there, and then let's move on. I think that was good to see.
Also, we didn't talk about this in this show, but I thought JJ was just, I thought that was a hell of a performance for your debut. Like, I thought he controlled the tempo of the game. He called timeouts in the proper. Yeah. Especially when that Bronny, the first Bronny run that happened, because the Timberwolves cut it, I think, to like 10, called a timeout. I thought Bronny was coming out, honestly. I thought that was it. I was like, oh, he's probably going to sub him in. Bronny came back for a second stint. The Lakers pushed the lead, I think, back to 11 or 12, whatever it was. No, I thought this was just an incredibly coached game by him. And, you know, for all involved, I thought the Lakers did this really well. put him in the right spot, right? He didn't just come in, you know, Lakers were down one in the first, at the end of the first. And I told you, Anthony, I was like, look, he's not coming in. And if the Lakers are down, like, I never believed he was ever coming into that type of game. Lakers got a nice solid cushion and he was able to check in, and LeBron and him and, you know, Savannah and Zuri and Bryce all there, and be able to get that moment was super cool. I thought it was funny. LeBron went to the bench one time and just randomly Maxwell Lewis is sitting right next to him. I'm like, it's like, oh, Maxwell Lewis, I'm saying, Monty's teammate in the G League. Just, you know, so just a really cool moment for him, though. And yeah, I'm glad, hopefully, you know, this was it, and Bronny can focus and develop in the G League, and, you know, they got their moment together.
And again, there is no better outcome here for the Lakers than Bronny being a legitimate NBA player down the road. I don't see it happening this year. I may not even see it happening next year. But if he does figure it out, if he does have that, like, Gary Payton, what is it, GP2?
Right? Mm-hmm. GP2.
If he has that, like, GP2 run where he really develops in the G League, becomes this defensive presence, you know, he learns to utilize his athleticism, maybe, like, learns to knock down a couple open shots and stuff, that means the Lakers get another good player.
Yeah.
You know, like, my priority here, my top priority is not LeBron and Bronny making history. My top priority is the Lakers being a good basketball team. And now look, like, to some, that isn't their priorities there. You do have a lot of LeBron fans who weren't Lakers fans before who come over here and want to see their GOAT make that kind of history too, and that's their top priority. You know what? Fan the way that you want to fan. But, like, for me, you know, this was a cool moment. It was still, like, very clear. I think we can all admit now, right? Photo op. We know what it was. And then we can now move forward, you know. And then next time, hopefully, that we see Bronny and Bron out there on the court together, it will be legitimately earned by Bronny. It will be a moment that, like, he gets out there and he's an actual NBA player, and those guys can go out there and impact winning together. That, to me, would be cooler than tonight was, personally. Sure. But, you know, it is also smart to get it out of the way and then let – this isn't how it's going to play out because of the content machine that exists. But I would, like, what is best for Bronny now is to be able to go down there and exist in relative anonymity and just develop, work his ass off, get better, keep getting better. And then the next time we see him, he's more ready for this moment, because he was pretty clear. He wasn't quite ready for this moment. He's not an NBA player right now.
No. And that's a tough, like, position to put anyone, but I mean, just, you could tell every eyeball was on him, and you could tell the nerves were probably there, which is understandable. But no, very cool moment. And like you said, it did not alter anything, didn't impact anything in terms of win losses. I believe he was like a -5, which, you know, whatever, the lead eventually got back to where it needed to be. So yeah, I thought, you know, great moment for him and the family. And it's clear, like, I think everyone wanted to just get this out of the way. Like, I think also LeBron probably doesn't want to hear this after every game either, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure doesn't want to hear, like, hey, what do you think about, why didn't Bronny play? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, he probably doesn't want to answer those questions. JJ doesn't want to answer those questions. Let Bronny develop in the G League. Right. I do think there's, like, a defensive player in there, which, and I honestly think players who have defensive upside who aren't stars actually have, like, in more of a roadmap to the NBA than, like, offensive players. By the way, GP2, another Laker South Bay guy, a guy who actually developed with them, was on their team, was in our backyard, was trying to make our team, and didn't, I forgot for who, we let him go. And then, you know, went to the Warriors pretty quickly after and became this one of the best defensive guards in the league, that, you know, can't shoot. It's just, that was a championship contributor. But yeah, it's just, I hopefully Bronny has some type of path there. And the G League's a great place for that. Lakers have hired a whole new developmental staff and new developmental coach, and have a lot of synchronicity between the Lakers and the G League and South Bay. So great moment. Glad, happy for the family. But now we can move forward.
I did like the whole, like, gaslighting that they did was like, oh, well, we don't really, you know, we're not sure that LeBron and Bronny right. are going to be able to, like, we want to make it natural. We want to make it organic. We don't want it to be forced. This whole thing is forced. You have Ken Griffey Jr. You have Ken Griffey Jr. flying in. Like, I don't think they just happen to want to catch a Lakers game tonight. So, you know, like, I'm just glad we could all like move on. Like, we can as all, a per- we can all, as we a can person- all just like consider, like, you know, call it what it is and move on.
As a person who didn't watch anything between those two, like, how good were they? Like, the Ken Griffey's, like, how, were they like both really elite at the same time? Like, what's their, I guess, NBA comparisons? Like, how good were both of them?
Well, Junior wound up being one of the best and one of the coolest players of all time. So
really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like, you'd have to look for a father or a parent kid combo, where the second kid wound up being like legitimately great. And I think Senior also, I believe, was in an All-Star game or two over the course of his career. So he was also a good baseball player. And then in the first game that they played together, they you know, one followed the other and they hit back-to-back homers, which is like the you know, we were trying to figure this out over the back-to-back homers, and it would be like back-to-back four-point plays.
Okay.
You know, like something like truly miraculous. Like Bean and Kobe, Senior was better than Joe Bryant. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know if that's necessarily the comp.
How about Steph and Del Curry as Omaris puts it?
That's probably closer. I still think Griffey Senior was better at baseball than Dell was at basketball, but that's probably is about as close as you can get. I go, yeah, especially because of how like evolutionary Steph has been. The thing with Griffey is, not only was he like an actually great baseball player, but he was so fucking cool. Like, he was so cool to watch. He has the prettiest swing in the history of baseball. Yeah, thank you, JD. I thought, yeah, Ken Griffey Sr. won your made three All-Star games. So, like, I don't think Dell made an All-Star game in his career. I think, you know, he probably participated in three-point contests, but I don't think he made an All-Star appearance. Yeah. So, like, I don't think there's a direct comp. But what's a good part about that comp with the Dell and Steph thing is the impact that Steph had on the sport and the impact that Ken had, or that the Junior had on the sport. Ken Griffey Jr. is just, I go back and like Google Ken Griffey Jr. home run derbies, and it is just beautiful. Like, his swing is just the coolest thing that has ever existed in that sport. All right, so let's wrap up here. We have a few starred comments, which means we get to play, if I find it, this thing, especially pertinent tonight. Stop watching! I hated watching all of the
trophy that up.
Banner and all right. Rye Guy asks, would Lewis, Gabe, JHS, and Cam get you to about $20 million in salary? Go get Sexton and Kessler with that pick, with that plus the pick, and I'm protecting the 27 first from the Russ trade. Boom. Don't hate. So I don't need another point guard.
That's how I was going to say. Yeah.
You know, like, I know a lot of people really, really like the idea of getting Sexton, but then you're getting Sexton. You're not moving D'Lo. I guess if you move D'Lo for a wing, that makes this move make a little bit more sense. But I do like the idea of going after Kessler, though. I think it's really difficult to get a white guy from Danny Ainge, but I do. It's in Utah of all places too. But like, that type of player is the kind of upgrade from Jackson that I think the Lakers could really benefit from.
Yeah, I don't see us getting Kessler either. But I mean, if it takes that to get Kessler, you have to take Sexton. I would really think, because Sexton's like legit good. Like, that's a good basketball player. It's just, I think the fit on this team would be a little bit tough. But he's like a really like tough defensive, like offensive guard as well. So, but yeah, I don't think that's the exact passage. Oh, and he threw my guy JHS in there, it looks like. So he's gone as well.
Well, that's it. Raj just blocked Rye Guy on Twitter. Justin Tindall writes, all offseason was worried Russell wouldn't be mature about the season. Thought he just went through the motions on the floor. I wasn't thrilled with D'Lo for the first three quarters of this game. And I thought there in the fourth quarter, he finally kind of got back to the things that the Lakers need him to do. There's a sequence of like three plays. First, he takes a screen at the top of the key, drives to his right, and very easily could have just pulled up for three there. Instead, kind of does like the hesitation dribble and then gets into the paint and knocks down a floater. And then the next time that he has the ball, he's coming up in transition. It looks like he's going to pull up for that transition three, but instead throws a pass to LeBron. It's an alley-oop for a layup. That was another big play. And then I think a couple plays go by, and then he winds up hitting Hayes on that alley-oop. Mm-hmm. And at least offensively, you know, really kind of got the Lakers, because at that time the lead was really kind of dwindling down, and that stretch from D'Lo helped get the Lakers back to a place where when Anthony Davis came back into the game, they had wound up playing those non-AD minutes neutral. So
yeah,
that was a huge stretch there from D'Lo. And again, a reminder that like I have never, it's not a Cam situation with D'Lo. I do think he's a good NBA player. I have questions about him in the postseason that have mostly been answered, unfortunately. But like, I do believe he's an impactful NBA player when he has his head on right. It just like for the first three quarters of this game and then maybe a little bit moving forward, I'm a little concerned that his head might not be screwed on in the right direction.
Yeah, it looked like he was, and I was worried about this, but he's trying to like turn it on after having it off for all preseason, you know, trying to flip that switch. And it was a lot of just lackadaisical stuff. And again, the talent's there. He's going to hit open threes like as the season progresses. But there was a play in the fourth quarter where LeBron hit a hit ahead and like D'Lo didn't even see a defender there, but decided to do like a flashy no looker to Rui, and like the ball went out of bounds, and I'm like, D'Lo, just take the layup. Like you have a layup, you're way ahead of the team. Like it's only a
well, I think they missed the foul call there. The defender ran in and fouled Rui,
right?
Yeah, and I don't know if they said that like the defender deflected the ball out of bounds or what, but it was a pretty clear foul that they missed. You're right. D'Lo should have just turned around and made the layup.
Yeah, but he was like acting like we're up 30. You know, it was like an 8-9 point game with like 3 minutes left. Like just go in and take the layup. Stuff like that, I think will fix itself. But I thought Anthony, the interesting part tonight, I thought it was a lot of like off ball D'Lo, like a lot more Austin on the ball as well. Like a lot more Austin initiating at the top. Austin got his own units to run. I thought D'Lo would get that second unit. It was like Austin getting the second unit to run. I thought that was interesting. And you know, D'Lo eventually got going in the fourth, but that's something I'm going to monitor like going forward. Kind of, it felt like he was kind of quiet, and again, maybe the 1-for-7 from three just dissuades him from taking shots. But a little passive, tonight.
And look, if he knocks down a couple of those threes, we're probably talking about him a little bit differently.
Yeah, you know, sure,
make or miss league. Justin Tindall writes again, whenever I thought we were going to blow this game, AD hit big shot after big shot, was impressed with Rui, thought his lateral quickness was improved. That point about AD knocking shots down, that was a thing that like you made the point earlier, Raj, that last year in a spot like that, it would be like, can we get AD the ball? Like, when's AD going to take a shot? Like, how many times under Darvin Ham did you look at the fourth quarter and be like, AD didn't attempt a shot after 1 minute to go in the third quarter, or it took AD 13 basketball minutes to get a shot up between the third and fourth quarters? But I thought in this one, he was never not involved and was very, very important, importantly, always willing to take that big shot, you know, and it happened to knock down more than he missed in with those big shots. I don't think his, 11 for 23 from the field isn't exactly, you know, anything to write home about. 13 to 15 from the free throw line is
right. That's where the 11 for 23 kind of lies, because the 15 free throws shown that like he was actually would have been a lot more efficient if he wasn't fouled. He was the go-to guy in the fourth quarter. Like they were like, here's the ball. Here's you have Gobert, a matchup that you like. Go attack. And he did. And I thought he, you know, really put the game away. Rui's lateral quickness. Yeah, it's something I think that's going to be tested against other teams. Again, Minnesota, not a lot of movement shooters that they put out there. Rui's able to kind of stand in, you know, in a place. I'm interested what it looks like against a Phoenix team that does run a lot of actions like that. A lot of guys that curl off screen. So it'll be interesting test Friday. But no, right about AD. Big shot after big shot.
All right. We do have one more super comment here from Justin, but I think I'm going to address this on tomorrow's show. Justin writing in, do you think Pelinka or someone else in the front office lies to Ham and or to Redick about injuries? Because there seems to be a lot of mixed messaging in these pressers. I don't think it's quite that simple. I'm going to answer this. I'll answer it really, really quickly. I think Ham, JJ are given talking points on these situations, and those talking points don't always align with reality. And I don't think that makes them lies per se. I don't think JJ is lying to us in those moments, but I think with how involved player camps are at this stage of the NBA, and with how much power agents wield, I think teams are reluctant to piss off agents by releasing too much information on their clients' availabilities or physical well-being. You have a lot of factors here going on. I don't think the Lakers are lying, but I do think that they are very careful not to piss off too many players.
I also don't think this is a Laker-centric issue either. No. You know, I saw you tweet about this as well. Like Philadelphia was saying that, you know, their stars were on pace to, you know, be ready for the regular season. And Paul George and Joel Embiid are both out to start the year. And there's no way that was the plan. That like the plan was supposed to be both of them ready. So, I think this is a issue around the league. Look at Kawhi Leonard, right, as well. Ty Lue goes up there and says one thing and then says, oh, I didn't know either. Like I found out with you guys kind of, you know, stuff that comes out. So, I think it's an issue around the league.
All right. That is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. Longer opening night one because of, you know, it's fun to talk about wins. Like it just is. And there was a lot to talk about coming off of this game. So a quick reminder to the 2,000 of you who are currently watching live, please do head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge and hit the subscribe button there. Hit the like button on this show and on this episode. That really helps us too. And then if you guys are listening to this in the morning, hit the subscribe button wherever it is that you get your podcast. And then most importantly here, tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends that you love it. Tell your enemies that you hate it. Because word of mouth is, ironically, in this digital world that we live in, still the strongest way to grow shows. So, Raj, any final thoughts before we get anybody out of here?
No, man, I'm excited. It's fun to be 1-0, get a win under the belt. We'll back on Friday for this. Well, I'll be in the building, by the way, on Friday. I've never seen Kevin Durant play live. Every single time I go, he's out or hurt or whatever it is. So excited to do that. Hopefully we're 2-0 after that.
Yeah, I'm also excited. I'm like this season, I think no matter how it goes, it's going to be fascinating. Obviously, we prefer it to go positively so it can be fascinating in the positive direction. But no matter what, the Lakers refuse to be anything but normal. This is a great way to kick off the season. Can't wait to continue doing these things. We'll be right back here tomorrow in what feels like a few hours. So until then, And until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Raj Chipalu. This has been the Lakers Lounge.